Stellar Fundraising Auctions presents Black Tie and Tails, brought to you by our partner Sojourn Ventures, featuring your co-hosts Greg Caroga and Devon Bell. Welcome to Black Tie and Tails, where we share tales of triumph and tragedy from behind the scenes of the wonderful world of fundraising auctions. I'm Greg Caroga, half of your co-hosting team, joined as always by my co-host Devon Bell.
Hello, all.
And Devo, are you you're ready for summer?
I am. I'm ready for our slow season of auctions, and I'm ready for some wonderful summer travel.
You travel. I want to have your travel schedule because you travel quite a bit. I know you're a fan of the Vegas. But do you go to Vegas in the summertime?
I'm going to Vegas in June.
So technically, yes, then.
That's like, yeah.
Did I just out you there? I feel like I outed you there.
Vegas? Whatever do you mean?
I think we'll be, our travel schedule is a little limited this summer, but I think we're going to spend some time in Portland. I like Portland.
I love Portland.
Portland's a lovely town.
Like California, it's half ruined, but still wonderful.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And Portland, one of the nice things about cities that have room to expand geographically, the rents are affordable for restaurateurs. And so one of the things I found in Portland is that we get more restaurateurs who are doing experimental, and by experimental, I mean gluten-free and dairy-free so my wife can eat there.
Yeah.
And so there are some amazing restaurants in Portland that I don't know if they ever would get greenlit in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. And of course, with regards to that, Portland has their whole urban growth boundary thing.
Sure.
And that leads to a whole set of issues. But you're right. One nice thing is that you get good restaurants, not all clustered downtown, but spread throughout the city.
Yeah. And restaurants like Bastion, shout out to Bastion. If you're ever in Portland and you want a meal that you wouldn't know was gluten and dairy free, Bastion's amazing. And one of the things about our job is that sometimes we get to travel for work. We get to go places and do cool things. And I know that you still have a couple of, I've got one event left. It's a travel event. You've got a couple events left, including a travel event. And on one of your events coming up, you get to go to?
To Sun Valley.
Sun Valley. And isn't like, what was it like? So do you fly into Boise and then drive?
Yeah. And I know you do some Sun Valley events as well. And the natural landscape on the drive from Boise to Sun Valley, and then I usually try to make a point to go drive somewhere pretty and check it out while I'm there, it's like an 11 out of 10 for beautiful.
Oh my gosh. You know, I think part of it is that, so to get to Sun Valley, you fly into Boise, which is a big, huge, flat plain, basically. And then you drive through a little bit of hills and mountains and go through another valley system, plain system, to get to basically the road that leads up valley to get into Sun Valley. And as you're driving up valley to get into Sun Valley, the Sawtooth Mountain ranges start to elevate around you and start to appear. And there's a lot of hyperbole in the world, especially when it comes to naming technology companies or clothing companies or that kind of stuff. But the Sawtooth Mountain Range is appropriately named.
There you go. Aptly named Sawtooth.
It is just phenomenal. And I'm with you. And one of the things that I've learned when traveling for work is to ask the people who live there, what should I do?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of when I travel, I ask locals, where do you eat?
Yeah.
Where do you eat? And after a while, you'll hear the same name a couple times and then you know you got something.
Yeah. My son, wife, and I used to go do the whole Sun Valley thing. If not every year, like every other year, we would go up there. And one year I had the foresight to ask a local, like, so, hey, what should we do? Like, we've got time this one day, because the Sun Valley, my experience used to be we would get there Wednesday or earlier, but I had responsibilities Wednesday evening, Thursday evening, big auction Friday, and then another responsibility Saturday evening, right? It wasn't all just vacation. It was workation is what we called it. But the Thursday, or the Wednesday, but there was time to go do stuff as a family, or if we got there early, like so on Tuesday, for example, and somebody was like, Redfish Lake.
I did the same thing. I went to Redfish Lake.
And And
wow.
Right. Like we like to think we have the copyright on natural beauty in California. Right. Like we pat ourselves on the back so hard. Right. We've got redwoods. We've got the leading edge coast.
Have you seen Tahoe?
Right. Right. And it is all beautiful. And if you've never been to Tahoe, go to Tahoe. Right. And if you've never stood on the cliffs overlooking the Pacific Ocean on a perfectly clear evening when the sun is setting, then boy, do I have a recommendation for you. But also in that same vein, if you've never been to Redfish Lake, like go to Redfish Lake. And I think it's part of the honor of what we get to do, or what's humbling about what we could do, is that we get to go to these places and help support these causes and meet these people and experience lives and lifestyles that are radically different from that of our own.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I have found that getting out there and eating somewhere where the locals eat, and going and seeing a local attraction, you know, but like kind of trying to immerse yourself as much as possible in the place, it helps with the fundraiser. It helps get the vibe of the people and the place, you know, that kind of thing.
One of the things I try to do is I'll read through the catalog, and if there is a particular chef who's come up year after year after year, I'll go see if I can eat at their restaurant.
Great idea. Right? Great idea.
And sometimes, like, there is an event I used to do in Portland, and I'm going to forget the name of the chef. This is pretty bad. But I went to his restaurant, and this was early on in my career. It was the night of the opera, and his restaurant was the one across the street from the opera. So I show up, and the place is packed with people in black tie and cocktail dresses, all getting ready to go. And I'm catching the tail end of the madness. And I walk in, and Chef recognizes me, and he's like, "Greg, it's so good to see you. Come on in." And I had that moment of, oh, that's why people pay for this. Right? That's why the auction lots we sell hit, because that having that relationship, being recognized by that chef, walking into a crowded room, being recognized, being immediately taken care of, that was really freaking priceless.
It's a perfect example of what you taught me, which is that people and relationships, experiences, things.
Right.
And so is it wonderful? Is it
vasectomies?
Vasectomies?
Even lower.
Vasectomy singular, let's hope. It's so wonderful to go to a restaurant and have a special dinner. It is so much more wonderful to have the chef come to your house and go,
yes,
I'm going to make this dish that you like, right?
Yeah. He didn't come into my house, but totally. Yeah. And there are, like, we have great travel experiences. I have a bad one, but let me let's talk about good travel before we get to the bad travel. Black Tie and Tales is brought to you by our partner Sojourn Ventures. If you need international travel in your auction at a reasonable consignment price, check out Sojourn Ventures. They curate trips to Bali, Spain, and now they have three options in Italy.
They have Venice,
yes.
They have Cortona in Tuscany, and they have Puglia in Salento. And my last auction, we actually just sold Venice and Spain.
Excellent. All of these trips have reasonable consignment prices. They offer ways to curate your packages. They have a menu of things that you can choose from and say, oh, I want this or that. Or if you want to do something specific, you can do that as well. You want to have an in-home dinner? Great. You want to have wine tastings in the Tuscan countryside? They can set you up. Your buyers are going to enjoy top-level concierge service plus 2 full years to redeem your trip, all at reasonable consignment prices. Just check out SojournVenturesTravel.com or look for the link in the bio of this podcast. Now, one of the things we get to do is travel for work, right? Sometimes we get to go to places and experience things. And sometimes I tell people I don't live the life I sell. Right. Like
not for the most part. No.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not spending $300,000 on an auction lot. Right. You know, right. Let alone 15 or 20.
I was just going to say $300,000. I'm not spending $8,000 on dinner.
Yeah, exactly. But I am exceptionally skilled, as are you, at getting other people to spend $8,000 on dinner. But I love
or 12
love traveling. Do I hear 13? Love traveling for work. Love the opportunity to go and visit new places and meet new people, and oftentimes get to stay places I otherwise wouldn't, right? Spoiler alert, my family's not a Ritz-Carlton kind of family when we travel, with the kid and the way, we're all,
Motel 6, Ritz-Carlton, us.
Somewhere in between, yeah. You know, like I have a lot of Marriott points. And I'm a valued member since 2004. Wow. They're like, oh, you've been, most of the time now it's like, oh, you've, well, good to see you, Mr. Quigora. Welcome in. We value your membership.
You've I'm been a third member. Your age.
Yeah, I'm a third your age. I wasn't born when you started doing, you know, it's like teenage kids. But one time I'm doing an event in Washington, D.C., and I get to stay at the Ritz, and I was like, sweet, I get to stay at the Ritz-Carlton, and I'm super excited. And I was in the middle of the busy season at a time when I wasn't always done with all of my auction lots before I showed up, right? So I show up planning like, okay, well, the night before the auction and maybe even a little bit the morning of, I'm going to be doing some script work, right? Which is, you know, it's, these days, now that I'm like a little older and driving less. Back then, I drove for more meetings, and so I lost more of the week to having to be places and meet people.
Remember doing the long drive to meet a bunch of moms in a Starbucks for 45 minutes? Right. We used to do that all the time. Okay, thank you, Zoom.
Yeah, you show up at a Pete's across the street from a gas station, like half a block off of 101 in Marin, right? In some random strip mall. And you're like trying to find a table, like, oh gosh, and the place is packed. You're like, where are we gonna meet? Right? Like, it was such a different world. So I show up and I thankfully they're like, just take a car. This is pre-Lyft, pre-Uber, but they're like, just take a cab. You don't want to drive. You don't want to rent a car. You don't want to. I'm like, thank goodness for that, because from the airport to the hotel, and actually technically I think it was all in Virginia, from the airport to the hotel is just wood-lined freeway. I mean, it's dark and I can't see anywhere where I'm like, thank God, you know, like, where are we? Right? You know, like I could, you know, being kidnapped at that point wouldn't know the difference. I have no idea where we're going, but he takes me, I get to the right hotel.
Don't let them take you to the second location, even if it's the Ritz-Carlton.
Even if it's the Ritz-Carlton. And we get to the Ritz, and I was underwhelmed by the Ritz-Carlton. And part of the reason I was underwhelmed was, this is a point in time when Wi-Fi is pretty standard. Everywhere you go, you expect there to be Wi-Fi. And I need to do work. I need to do research. I need to be working on my auction lots. And I get to the room and I go to log on. And not only is the Wi-Fi not included at the Ritz-Carlton, and this is such a whiny thing to say, but it comes down to like customer service and managing expectations for when people get there. I've found the more expensive the hotel, the more likely they are to charge you $30 a day for Wi-Fi.
$30.
And you know, like it's a silly complaining thing to say. Of course I paid it. It's a business expense. I needed the other, but
is this
like
pre-hotspot or something?
Yeah, totally.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
It on my phone. Yeah, I wonder what that Ritz-Carlton charges now. But three things happened at this particular auction that were kind of fascinating. One, they were operating under it, if we build it, they will come mentality.
That's so, always scary.
So we went from 400 people to 350 to 300 to 250 to 200 to, well, we've got 150 tickets sold for the night of the event.
80 paddles.
And we're keeping the same ballroom.
What?
So it felt super empty.
Right. Echoey.
Organization that served youth, educational programming and classes and after school stuff. And this is early days of 3D printers. So they had a 3D printer set up that was 3D printing. I wasn't sure if it was a rook from a chess set or just a little castle piece, but it was super, I mean, it was amazing. It had a little staircase winding down in the center of it and windows, and it was crazy. Wow. I loved it so much, I talked the guy into letting me have it. So I brought that home.
Very M.C. Escher.
Yes, I'll take a picture or video of it and include it on the YouTube version of this, because I still have that rook on the shelf behind me in my office. And at that auction, one of the auction lots was to have the author John Gilstrap write you into his next novel. And John Gilstrap does crime fiction, military crime fiction kind of stuff. Like, you know, he's got like the all-American hero who, you know, can see it coming from a mile away kind of guy. It's like fun reading in the vein of Reacher, right?
I was totally thinking Reacher when you said that.
If you're going, you know, like, if you liked Jack Reacher, you'll love John Gilstrap's hero.
He doesn't look for trouble, but trouble finds him.
And so this is back in the day before my tablet. So I've got a notebook with my script printed in it, right? I had to print it, which you don't even want to know how much per page the Ritz wanted for printing my script, right? Had to print it. And, you know, my notebook, I have a few OCD tendencies that I have overcome. Not a ton. I wouldn't say I'm obsessive compulsive, but I have a few OCD tendencies. And one of them early on, especially, was my notebook, right? Like I would get in the car and drive three blocks and be like, oh my God, is my notebook in the car?
Me too.
And then like, I would pull over, stop, go check,
yep,
get back in the car,
yep,
drive three blocks and be like, but wait, what about the notebook?
Did I put the pages inside it?
So
that's totally me.
So and whenever there's a donor, I try to meet the donor, try to chat them up, try to find out as much as I can about their lot and about them and make sure. So I'm chatting John Gilstrap up.
And a great thing about talking to a donor, just a little side,
sure,
is that not only do they often tell you something about the lot that you didn't know that then you can share with the crowd.
Sure.
But they also are so excited and want it to succeed that they'll throw something in.
Right.
And having them throw it in before you start talking about it is way better than
right,
having the bidding get all the way up and then they throw it in at the end, which
doesn't
usually
work.
Doesn't do much.
Doesn't
yeah,
work.
Yeah.
Once the bidding gets started, people have made up their mind if they're interested or not.
Yeah. If you're in for five, then the fact that they're going to throw in an extra bottle of wine won't make it six.
Yeah. But once the bidding is started, if you throw in that extra, well, and if you're only in for five and it's at 10, then you were out long ago, right?
Right.
You stopped paying attention. So telling people about the extra bottle of wine before you start the bidding maybe keeps them engaged.
Yeah. And it just juices it. If you can say, here's what it is, and I talked to the donor right before and they so want this to succeed that they're also going to throw in this, and people
yeah,
can go, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So John Gilstrap, right? Mystery crime fiction writer. People are like, oh, well, let's get a picture of you and the auctioneer together. And, you know, blah, blah. And so I set my notebook down,
oh,
right? I know.
I've done it.
And walk away from it, right? And I take the picture and I'm all smiley with John. But the whole time I'm like, what, you know, like I keep checking it,
corner
right?
Your eye.
That corner of my eye, like, where's my notebook? Did the waiter take my notebook? Where's my notebook? I need my notebook. Please don't touch my notebook. My notebook. And so as soon as we get the picture, right, what I think is very casually and calmly walk around the table and pick my notebook up again. And John doesn't miss a beat. He's like, okay, man, what's in the notebook?
Oh, what's in the box?
And I'm like, oh, you got me, right? You know, but I'm like, and I told him, I said, it's very astute observation of you. I appreciate you. And I'd never heard of him before. That was when I started, like, I'm a binge reader. So I read like five of his novels in the next few months and just went on a Gilstrap binge after
that. A Gilstrap
binge. Yes. But, it was such a funny moment. Like, just like, he just so like, no one else in the room has ever caught it before, has ever yeah, noticed, but he was just like,
I have forgotten my notebook on the lectern after the auction
right,
was over.
Sure.
And then it doesn't matter.
Right. Too yeah. Late. Yeah. Yeah. Fine. Yeah. 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 Whatever. I've left it a bind. I'm like, well, somebody's going to see how scripted
time
I am.
Time to buy a new notebook.
Yeah. Yeah. Time. But before the auction, like white knuckling. And then when I switched to the tablet, which I love my tablet. I switched to the tablet, like, there's a certain level of expectation just going to be like, you're not going to lose a tablet, right? Like, you would have to try to lose a tablet.
Let's hope not. Yeah.
And if the tablet fails, which it's done, I've had a tablet.
But you emailed yourself the script for your phone.
Everything's in the cloud.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
I can just, it's, you know, everything's
the
in the cloud.
I have never had to use it on my phone. Have you?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I've had
so
to
you
do
were.
It. I had to do it on my phone when being in the sun for an outdoor event.
And you couldn't read it?
No, it fried it.
Oh.
The battery overheated. And it was like, you know what? Not today.
Yeah.
And I'm not, no. Today, I don't, my tablet was like, I don't do this.
No. I need a nice tea and some shade.
Yeah, please. Yeah. Please. Like, give me a minute. And I tucked it under the podium and let it cool off. And eventually it came back. But
that's crazy.
And it is like part of the reason we touched on pros versus volunteers with Michael three episodes ago. And
first spotters, you mean?
just anything, like for pros versus volunteers, and for Auctioneer as well.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that people don't take, we're just going hodgepodge, potpourri, summertime,
a little bit of everything, summertime.
One of the things that, like, being a professional gives you experience, and people don't understand sometimes what experience means in terms of, like, oh, sure, you've sold lots of lots, but also, oh, sure, you've been on stage when things have gone well.
Yes.
And you've been on stage when things have not gone well.
Yes.
And the to have things go wrong or not go as well as you're hoping, like you talked on the last episode about how at the end of an event, if anything has happened, we want the crowd to not know about it or have felt it.
We agonized and overthought everything. And then if you were to write, and oh, it's disaster after disaster. And hopefully if you asked someone in the crowd, they'd say, I didn't even notice.
Didn't notice, right? And so, you know, we hope that any issues with catering are limited, that any issues with, you know, AV going out or anything else. But when it happens to us, like, part of being a professional is being prepared to handle a situation like that in the moment without freaking out and without. So I just did an event this past week where we were outdoors, and the previous year, there's too much sun on the tables. So what's the logical reaction? Put up umbrellas, right? And they said, from the stage, you can see under the umbrellas. I'm like, yeah, from the stage, I can see under the first umbrella.
Right, maybe the first two rows.
Right.
Yeah.
But once we get past that, now we're into the realm of, they can't see me, I can't see them. Right. So we came up with a plan on the fly of as soon as there's no sun on an umbrella, take it down.
Okay. Right? You know, just so, like, gradual, like waves of umbrellas.
Waves of umbrella coming down. Right. You know, blah, blah, blah. Fine. At one point, we travel with our own microphones. We have our own microphones. It's like my Excalibur. I love my mic. Little Madonna mic and blah, blah, blah. And
Garth Brooks, Britney Spears.
There you go. And my mic, like, the sound system hits me, baby, one more time, because suddenly it makes this, like, loud crackling popping noise, and I look at the sound guy, I mute my mic, and that
was that me, yeah,
doesn't stop it.
Oh my
right
God. Oh
like
my
it continues God. So I tell him to, like, cut my mic, and he comes running over, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's your cable.
Yeah.
Right. Because my mic was fine on Saturday night. And I'm pretty sure it's your cable. How about I grab the handheld and I start using the handheld while you get a new freaking cable and figure this out.
Right. And we're always ready. I mean, one of the things about having experience is we're ready to roll with whatever. And grabbing a handheld is totally eminently doable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're going to bust a freestyle.
You just roll with the flow. Like, and suddenly you get to, like, you know, play with the mic and pulling it in a way and, like, doing stuff. Making it sound. And so after the auction, somebody told me, I was like, oh yeah. And they're like, oh no, you rolled with that great. But also, she said, I think it helped you. She's like, because it was so different and so shocking and got everybody's attention, and you just rolled straight with it. She's like, I think, I'm like, cool, high five, right? You know, that's why, that's one of the myriad reasons you have a professional, right?
Yeah. Well, you said it perfectly, which is that, first off, if you just get someone that is like, this looks fun, I can do it, you're in for big trouble, because they don't even know when or how to close out each lot. They don't know what to do just in the regular course of auction business.
Sure.
But what you're paying for with us is that the sound goes out, the video doesn't play, someone saw, and donors complaining because you have to reopen a lot.
Somebody starts choking on their food, or God forbid has a heart attack.
Right, right. And we've been doing this long enough now, 10 years, 20 years.
11 years.
11 years, 21 years, that that when a situation like that, which is rare but urgent, comes up, we can go, oh, here's how we dealt with it. Here's how we dealt with it the first time and it failed. And here's how we dealt with the second time, which is much better. That's what we're going to do this time.
And to call back to the last episode, also, we've learned to be in the moment with the crowd.
You right? have to. You have to.
You can't pretend something's not happening, right? So my microphone starts making all this noise and I'm like, well, that was unpleasant, right? You're like, you totally go like, you don't try to pretend that was good. Like, there's nothing about that was good. Like, right. Woo, that was no fun, right? We'll figure it out. We'll work it out. We'll move on, right?
Did anyone hear anything? Yeah, right. Yeah. Did you hear something?
Just like, oh, well, that was great. Well, we keep rolling here. I think that, so I worked with an organization. They did like a small auction, like 5 or 6 lots in a fund the need. And they're thinking about going fund the need only. And they're like, well, if we're going fund the need only, we want to save the money and not pay you, right? And I'm like, okay. You know, I hear you. And
tell me how that goes. Yeah.
No, it gets better.
Okay.
Because they said 2 of our board members want to do the fund the need. I said, okay, great. And then they asked, would you train them? And I said, sure. I am happy to sit down. So they bought me a lunch at the Olympic Club, the not the golf course, but the Olympic Club in so, town.
Yeah, you're like, I have done 400 auctions at that point. And so I'm going to explain that to them during lunch.
And so I sat down with them and I said, look, here's the deal, right? I told them like all of the things about doing a fund to need only event that are challenging.
Yep.
You can't have the first words out of your mouth be now
asking
give
for money.
Yeah, now
yep.
give me $10,000.
Yep.
You need to build some rapport with the crowd. You need to be willing to hang out and let that pressure percolate. Right? To let that pressure simmer. There's no, like, you don't need to move quickly through it. Like, let the audience, like, sit in it for a moment. All these things. And I gave them all, like,
yeah,
try to...
Uncomfortable silence can be your friend.
Say the paddle number and the increment.
So they have time to write it down.
Right? Like I gave them, I gave them Fund the Need 101. They did that. And a year later, they hired me back. Because even with all of the training from the professional who does it, it is a skill that takes practice. My son asked me, like, how do you get so good at something? And I'm like, he doesn't ask anymore because he's like, I know, practice.
10,000 hours.
Yeah, 10,000 hours, yep. Right?
When someone says, we found someone who will do the auction for free, I always say, you know, best of luck. You get what you pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my door's always open, right?
See you next year.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm always like, and I always tell organizations, look, I hope you do great. If they change, like if they bring in a different professional auctioneer, I hope you do great. Right. But in the event that you miss me, I'm here. Right. I'll always be ready to jump back in the water and work with an organization again. Love the clients I have. And at a certain point, I kind of freaked out when I realized I have more past clients than current clients. And that's just the nature of any business. Like eventually you're going to want, like you on a long enough timeline, dates change, things happen, events go away. But the first time I realized that, I was like, oh my, there's something wrong. Like, no, that's just the nature of the business.
Yeah. And you can't, you know, I remember Ed telling me, I guess it was you too, how you, Ed specifically, I guess, was telling me how during the, you know, when he was doing auctions like 2008, 2009, it was very challenging because numbers were down all across the board.
Yep.
And guess what? The auctioneer is someone to look at and go, hey, let's find right. ways that you could have done something better when, hey, this is macro stuff, people. It's yeah. macro.
Yeah. It's interesting because we're kind of there again.
We're getting there.
We're kind of there
again. It's probably gonna get worse before it gets better.
Who knows? Yeah. I am not an economist nor a legal analyst, but I can say that this year feels a lot like previous years of economic pullback when the tide has pulled back, or economic uncertainty for sure.
Yeah. The donor class looks more closely at their portfolio than they do at their income.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this year feels a lot the same. And this year, I think one of the takeaways is, it's kind of a random takeaway to arrive at from this conversation because it has nothing to do with everything other than the last thing. But if your event raises as much money as you did last year, you're doing great, right? The same as last year, or maybe a little more. This is not the year to be aiming to set records. And if you are setting records, hallelujah. Like your crowd is amazing. They're totally committed, right?
Well, and it's and if you did do better in this environment, it's time to really look at what you did this year, because that's your jam, yo. Like, you just learned something about how to run your event.
Yeah.
That's great.
So that gave me a bunch of ideas about things to talk about, but I don't want to try to bring them up at the end of an episode, because I think that what we should do is say, okay, next time, let's talk about getting started for fall.
Okay.
And talk about some of the best practices or secrets for soliciting auction lots from a crowd in an economic environment like this.
What you mean, the Zamboni story and the quarry story?
We're not telling the Zamboni and the quarry story. No. We're telling different stories this time around. But if you haven't heard the Zamboni or the quarry story, we'll happily tell
Stay
you.
Stay tuned, listener.
Stay tuned. Trying to think if there's any other takeaways. No.
Well, I have one more.
Okay, please.
It's a Ritz-Carlton.
Okay.
I was traveling and staying at the Ritz-Carlton, which is not my usual.
Sure.
And when I was checking in, I told the front desk person, I would really love as high a floor as you give me because I like the view. And I would love a bathtub because after the event, man, I'm just going to soak in a bath and relax.
I've heard you like to spend some time in the water.
I am a bit of a bather, yes. And so, and I slipped the front desk person $20.
All at once?
Which is in ones. Don't spend this all in place. And it may be that $20 is a slap in the face to the Ritz-Carlton ilk, because she put me on the ground floor. Not only no tub, but a big ADA railing plastic thing, like shower. I think, like, I got your $20 right here, buddy.
Yeah, so, totally. It's like, keep it. You need this more than I do.
First time at the Ritz, is it? Anyway, there's my little aside of the Ritz-Carlton.
That's hilarious. That's a great note to head into summer on. So thank you, listener, for joining us on this episode of Black Tie and Tales. We appreciate you. As always, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, or any of your other favorite podcast distribution channels. You can also find us at blacktieandtales.com. Join us next time when we talk about getting ramped up for the fall season. But until then,
subscribe, smash that like button,
hit that like and subscribe button, and have a good summer. And remember, no matter where you go, use your powers for good when you get there.